Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The Age of Heroes has dawned and the quest for optimal wellness continues. Today on Herculean Physique, I'm honored to be speaking with Puerco Fuerte about mace training and competition. Greetings and welcome, Puerco. How are you today?
Doing well. Thank you, sir.
I'm glad to hear it. Before we begin the conversation on mace training, tell us a little bit about yourself. What was your journey to mace training like?
So, like many things in my life, it happened by accident. And I was, so my primary profession was, I'm a master chef. And so on a whim, I started doing barbecue catering, like a cliche Texan I am, and it was like 1 a.m. on a Saturday night, and I was tending to my barbecue pit and going through, you know, various YouTube channels, and came across a YouTube channel of Rick Brown, Mr. Mace Man, and I thought that was interesting, and I really did enjoy it. And so I was like, well, I'd been a gym rat my entire life, so that was, and had a, you know, a background in martial arts. And so I was like, you know what, that sounds really practical. I'll reach out to him and talk to him. So at 1 a.m. on a Saturday, I reached out to Rick Brown, and within 5 minutes he answered back the question I had asked. So that I talked to him like for like an hour or so, something that night, which really struck me as it really struck a chord with me, like a positive note about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I asked him, is he been going to be anywhere near San Antonio? Is, you know, something like that. And he says, well, I'm going to be in Austin in like a month. And so, so that's when I first met, I got first introduced to the Mace. By that, you know, through Rick Brown, just by chance.
So. Rick Brown is a great guy. He's been on the show before, and I've had conversations with him also. I called him out of the blue, too, and we had a very long conversation, and he was a guest on the show, I guess, around a year or so ago, and he'll be on again. He's busy doing a class right now, but he's going to be on soon. But I'm glad that your portal into this was through Rick, because Rick is awesome.
Yeah, he, I became really, really, now I'm on Rick's break, excuse me, I'm on Rick's speed dial when it has something to do with food. and he contacts me when he's asking about food or barbecue or something like that. So, I mean, that's the relationship we have now. Like he, and just recently, several weeks ago, he and I were in Germany together. And I assisted him on a workshop, you know, a certification class there in Lübeck, mm-hmm. Germany. And that was a very, like, awe-inspiring moment for me, is to be, you know, in the same event with him. And he has held me in that type of high regard. So I you know, it's becoming like a full circle type of thing. So.
Oh, that is awesome. You said that you're a gym rat and you also were into martial arts. Did you do mostly barbells, dumbbells, or universal, or what type of things fascinated you and engaged you in the gym?
A lot of it was like that standard, quote-unquote, conventional training, you know, basic weight, you know, free weights, you know, machines, things to because I fell into that you know, like all young people, you know, it's all about aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I fell into that mindset of doing those things, being a, you know, Van Damme looking martial artist out there with my shirt off, doing my martial arts work, things like that. So I fell into that mindset, and over time, that my mentality changed to obviously a practical, functional aspect of just getting older, and so so that's when I started looking into other venues. I did kettlebells. I did specifically kettlebells just because they were the easiest for me to buy. at the time. You know, it was early 2000s, and I quit going to, I stopped going to conventional gym just because it got expensive. And started by rails and free weights, and started kind of playing around with them. And so that's really what kind of, you know, got, you know, sparked my interest in trying different forms of training. And so like anything, that's what attracted me to the Mace. It was different, and, you know, not a lot of people knew about it. So I just kind of, it really did spark my interest. So, I mean, that's one, and it still does, even today. Like, I always think I'm doing the bare minimum. I want to do more than that. So I believe I've just scratched the surface of my capabilities, and I'm coming up on, I think, like 7 years of doing it consecutively for a while. I always think I could be better. I've never... Yeah,
I can understand that, and I can respect it, but obviously Rick Brown thinks you've done more than scratch the surface, and you were recommended. I think you're the first guest that was recommended by the community that I built on Facebook. Your name came up right away, so I think other people believe that you're doing more than scratching the surface too. So I understand the need to excel and the need to do better. That drives me to a great extent also, but I think you've gotten there already.
Oh, well, if everybody else thinks so, then I guess I'm doing a good job at it then.
Now, so you did the kettlebells, barbells, dumbbells, machines, standard gym equipment. And when did you start training with the Mace, like, more exclusively? And why the Mace over the other forms of weight?
I've had this... I'm going to get nerdy here for a moment. I've always loved, like, wrestling, just because I was a grappler by nature. I wrestled, you know, throughout, you know, my youth, and then got into jiu-jitsu and judo and stuff like that. And so I ended up seeing an old video of an old-time wrestler doing a Mace. And so I didn't know what it was. And so that was quite a bit that struck it. And so the voiceover was the wrestler, and now to my mind I can't remember the wrestler's name, but he voiced over talking about how it you gain strength by doing this particular implement. And so this was after I had already spoken to Rick Brown. And so what I did is I didn't want to buy a Mace if I wasn't going to use it use it at all. So what I decided, I was going to make my own. So I looked up how to make a traditional gata. And so I made it, and I decided since I made it, I'm going to go ahead and use it to the best of my capabilities at the time. And I've watched old video of myself from that time, and it's very cringeworthy. We all have that. We watch ourselves after we match something. They're like, oh, man, what's wrong with me? But I watched myself. I was like, oh my gosh, I've come so far in that amount of time. So I decided that was going to be me. That's exactly how I wanted to train. That's exactly how it, you know. So I train the Mace every day in a varying degree. I mean, I don't just stickly with what I vary the workouts throughout the day. But, so I've decided that the Mace has been one of those things. It's been very, it's been a journey, and I don't think I'm done with this journey. I think I'm going to be doing this for a very long time.
Well, good. Then I can have you on as a repeat guest, and you can
that'd be great.
take us along on your journey. You mentioned the gatas, so you're aware of the Mace's long history and its use as a magical weapon in mythology.
I did the research. I looked around. Like, it's one of those things I'm going to be like, if I'm going to know what it is, I'm going to know what it is. And so I did the research on it and read the articles. And every so often I'd find, you know, an interesting, you know, take on it, you know, the methodology and the philosophies onto it. And so I try to expand my horizons. It's not just with Mace. I do that with us. I have that nerdy aspect about me where I want to know about the system, and I want to know about the people that started the system. So that's you know, same thing happens in martial arts. I'm a martial arts history nerd as well as being a martial artist. So that's one of the things that, you know, again, with the Gata, I wanted to know what the tool was before I mastered the tool.
Yeah, they have, since antiquity, the Hindu figure of Balarama, who is either a brother or a twin of Krishna, he supposedly taught mace fighting to the other divinities. And sometimes his mace is drawn as a farm tool, and other times it's drawn as a regular mace. The tradition goes very far, even beyond the West with the mace fighting. Hercules, the original one, used a branch. I guess that would be analogous to a baseball bat rather than a mace. But that baseball bat, as it moved upward, eventually became Thor's hammer Mjolnir. They've traced that with great detail, and you could see it evolve from a stick essentially to, you know, a hammer, it mutated, and when it went out east, it became Vajrapani's lightning weapon. And I also am a nerd about such things, so I've studied extensively the mace and its history. So it's great that people who actually practice with the mace are also aware of that tradition.
Yeah, it was, you know, like, I always had that mindset that if, you know, if it's good enough for the people thousands of years ago, it's good enough for me.
There you go. So are you still doing Master Chef type of work?
So yes, and I have my own barbecue catering company, quote unquote, Ben's mm-hmm. Barbecue LLC, and what really struck, that really hit us hard was when COVID happened and the pandemic, and when restaurants and food trucks and, you know, things like that started been given the okay to open up. They changed the rules on the health and safety side, and it was understandable. Obviously they want to keep people safe. And so because of that, I didn't renew my license because I didn't fit in. I believed that, you know, I can do better cooking for friends and family than I could with the public. So specifically I do larger catering, you know, gigs and events that if my family or friends are connected to it as a favor to them, so they don't have to worry about, you know, who's going to bring the food. Well, I know somebody who can do the food. So that's what I do. And I do small batch of catering. I'm a cliche tech, and when it comes to that, I have a large barbecue pit, and I like to, you know, tend to the fire, and, you know, I'm a very hands-on chef, it was one of the skills, like with mace and martial arts, is that I really did hone that skill for so many years, because I did high-end restaurants for 20 years of my life. And so I worked my way up to the ranks and became an executive chef, and one day decided, I don't want to cook for these people anymore. I hate it here. And decided to start my own thing, and it worked out well for the time we had it going. So.
And are you on any particular diet? Like, I know for me, I've tried a million different eating lifestyles, I guess we call them. But what works best for my body is the keto or Atkins phase one type of diet, where it's low carbs, except for like greens. I can have as much salad and greens as I want. And then meat. Or eggs, or certain types of cheese. And as long as I stick to that, I'm fine. But if I stray from that, I'm not fine. And then I need to rebalance everything again.
Yeah, so as a diet specifically, I've cut back on portion sizes. That's mm-hmm. really what's helped me out a lot, is that I was notorious for eating TikTok dogs in a second, you know, that type of thing. Like I pictured my death being in a pie eating contest type of thing.
Uh-huh.
But What I've done is actually because I can make Barbie here for days, and in that time I portion that out to say I'm going to use, you know, this bit of chicken or this bit of turkey or whatever I've cooked to save, and I'll eat period, you know, I'll portion out to like 3 ounce portion, something like that. And I just control that aspect. I cut out a lot of the fried foods, and that's a lie. I don't cut out fried foods all the time. If there is fried chicken available, I'm going to eat the fried chicken.
Okay.
But it's how much of that chicken do I consume? That's where I set myself. You know, come about leg number four, and you know what? Maybe I shouldn't finish it. So that's pretty much what's helped me out. I know, so I have to, especially in competition, keeping a constant weight, that's always the hard part. So that, you know, I try to stay under 200 pounds. That's my goal, stay under 200 pounds, because then if I was above 200 pounds, then I have to hurt myself to keep up with that type of, the heavyweight guys are large and tall and able to swing heavy, and that's something I can't do for that amount of time.
Well, you're from your pictures, you're very muscular, like on your shoulders and your upper chest and your arms, you know, and a mace is something very heavy, even at the lighter weights, like unlike when you do barbells or dumbbells or D weights or even kettlebells, you know, where it's all balanced. The mace is imbalanced, so it gives you a totally different workout.
Yeah. It's a good cardio workout when I don't feel like running. I'll wake up and be like, I'm not going to go for a 5K. I think I'll just do a bunch of mace.
Now, I was thinking of making my own mace also. There are some great videos and online. There's a lot of information on making one. And Rick has two free books online for anybody who wants to introduce themselves to the topic. And I put them in the group so that folks can find them. I was thinking of taking a barbell and not loading one end just to start me off on my mace journey, or to use a sledgehammer. That was plan B until I can get the more traditional or newfangled, more balanced maces. What did you do to start? You said that you were going to make one. Did you finally make your own gada? And how has that evolved in time?
So actually I did exactly what you were talking about. I did the sledgehammer. And I went and bought one. I went to like the discount hardware store and bought one for like $4. It was a 10-pound sledgehammer. And so I still have that sledgehammer because I still use it as a sledgehammer. And I have it as a reminder of where I started. That's one of the funny things to me. And so I did, when I was able to make my own, I used a, as a mold, I used a bucket. And I had a pot. They were plastic pots. That's what I used first. And then I was able to transition to more of a spherical one. And actually what it started was when I made my first couple maces, it was right before Halloween. And when I, that first ever certification I did with Rick, it was after Halloween, and Greg Morris, you know, and Greg and John up in Austin, when they had their gym in Austin, they had made gadas out of pumpkins, you know, the jack-o'-lantern, you know, pails.
Oh, wow.
That was such an amazing idea. And we ended up buying them. My wife and I ran out to the CVS and bought them because they were all on discount then after that. We bought like three of them for like a quarter or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I made two maces out of those first two pumpkins. And I still have them today. That's the funny part. One ended up being 21 pounds. The other one ended up being 23 pounds. And I still use them today. So that's what makes it great is that I was like, ha-ha, success. So now I had a round mace, and then I had one that I keep hitting myself in the cab with, which was the one that's shaped like a pot. It had a sharp edge around it that I think I scratched myself like six times a day, every day, for like up the first year or something like that with it. So that's funny how it turned out to be is that I ended up graduating from, you know, we would buy old, round glass, containers or like at Michael's or Hobby Lobby or whatever craft store was having a sale. And we would buy the glass ones. And I did the whole thing where I would put the concrete in, put the pole in it, you know, obviously I'd have, you know, screws put into the end of the pole anyway. And then after it set, after several days, I'd smash the glass off with a hammer. And ta-da, it's a round regatta.
There you go. I think my journey is going to be very similar in terms of I'll start off with a sledgehammer or a barbell kind of skewed, and then from there it'll evolve and I'll try different things and eventually I'll find what works for me. You said that you've been doing this for years. How many years exactly have you been doing it, and how long before you became a competitor?
Well, funny story. I started this journey in 2018. No, it was later than that. No, earlier than that. 2000. I'm trying to remember. That's the hard part.
Okay.
2017. That's when it started. And it was 2018, I believe. 2019. 2018 when I did my first quote-unquote competition, and my plan was not to really compete but to cater the event, and
okay.
That's really what I was there with food, and I set up a table. It was gonna, you know, we had smoked turkey. It was gonna be a great time, and it did turn out to be a great time because I got asked to compete in three events. And I won all, and I won all three without even, you know, trying. And so that kind of sparked my interest, really, of what I was able to do, what my capabilities were. And then I came up with I had this mindset now that this could be a thing for me. This could be another, something else for me to do to, you know, see where it goes. And look, here we are today. But it was, I didn't go into a competition thinking I was going to do really well. I went into a competition like, oh, great, I'll just, you know, stand on this platform and swing this mace, and that's all I'll do. But then it ended up being something more. And it really sparked that competitive nature in me that I hadn't had for years. Like, I fell into it like any person that competes as a youth. You know, they go through a rut where they don't want to compete at all. And I kind of felt like that. I fell into that rut. So I have to give Mace and Mace Training and Gata Training, I have to give that credit because that sparked that fire in me again. That gave me a new avenue to have a positive mindset, to stand on a platform, smile, and swing a mace. And I did it great.
Now, the type of physique you build with mace training is very different than a bodybuilder's physique or a wrestler's physique. It's different exercises, so you develop a different body type. How did your gym friends respond to this different type of mythic physique that you were developing?
Well, The interesting part is that it's even today after they've, you know, I get a lot of people that I used to train with that say, what's this thing and why are you swinging it? And so I give them the answers and I give them a taste of it. And then they still, they have that mindset like, well, it's not really going to work for me. the thing. And so my group of friends within the gym narrowed to the people that I have more friends in the Mace community than I had in the martial arts community that I grew up in, because of everybody has the same mindset then. Everybody has a life of their own, you know, family, friends, career, and then there's Mace. And so we all have that camaraderie, that we all have different avenues, we all have different paths, but we all come together for the Mace. And so those are the people that I hold very dear to me, are the people in the Mace community, because they were the most welcoming, even though it was a brand new thing. We all were in the same boat. There are the people, obviously, there's the naysayers, which it happens in everything.
Yes.
But the Mace community as a whole is a very welcoming, you know, we encourage the fact to try something new. If you don't like it, well, that's fine. You know, shake hands and we'll be friends. So, I mean, so that's how it really is something that I really did hold dear because of those facts. You know, I got to meet, you know, traveling and competing. I got to meet all these people that I knew through social media, and I didn't realize they were there to meet me. So,
awesome.
So that's how I was like, hey, how are you? And I'd sit there and chat with you, and then all of a sudden, by the end of the day, we're having pizza and chit-chatting about, you know, the things that we screwed up on while we're on the platform. And I do that all the time. I screw up at least once a competition, not intentionally. It just kind of happens. But
well,
you're open and honest about it, though,
and that's good.
We
all make mistakes more frequently than not, and if we acknowledge that and learn from them, then no shame in losing or no shame in making a mistake.
Yeah. And so I laugh about it every time. At the 2021 Vintage Strength Games, I was compete at that particular competition was, or that event I was competing in was a single-handed club mill, right? And so the club is swinging in front of me, so humid and hot in Orlando, like I was sweaty all the time, and so the club slipped from my hand.
Ooh.
And almost hit the guy. And so I yelled at him, no, don't stop. Because once it hits the ground, I'm, you know, my clock stops. And that's fine. At that moment, I was making sure he was still going. I didn't care about myself at that moment. Making sure he was okay so he could keep going. And it missed him by an inch. But still, that's an inch of like, oh, my gosh, I almost killed somebody. So, I mean, that's really how it turned out. Anyway, but I think he won that event. Because my clock stopped at, like, I think minute 7 or minute 6 or something like that, but I was still a country, you know, my score was still super high. So, I mean, that's how I approach it, is that if I'm doing great and I hurt myself, that's on me. If I hit somebody else, oh crap, that's on me. So
That's very admirable and very noble. And again, I respect those who assume responsibility for their actions. We live in a world where that isn't always the case, where people are basically pass the buck or try to blame somebody else for what's going on with them. So it's great that you take that responsibility. You didn't mention your art at all. And now that we're halfway through the program, you're an artist as well as a master chef, a martial artist, a mace competitor, and all the other things that you are. Tell us about your art.
So art was, this is funny. So I've been a comic nerd my entire life. Comic books and cartoons are one of those passions of mine. And so I've always been an artistic, you know, kid. And growing up, you know, I did art classes, and I did excel at them. And the only thing my parents were ever disappointed in, they were fine with me being a martial artist. They were fine with me doing all these other things. The one thing I know for a fact they were disappointed with the fact I didn't go to art school. And because, and so over a period of years, I would go through, and it was a sign of the time. So I was in bad relationships. I was in a dark place in my life where I didn't feel inspired to do any artwork at all. And it went for a number of years. And I would draw sometimes. I got a bad taste for it, and I don't recall how I got that bad taste, because, you know, it was overshadowing something else. And so I decided way back when that I was going to start drawing at least once a day. Draw, it could be a sketch, it could be, you know, pen and ink, whatever, something once a day. And that once a day turned into like six times a day. And then, you know, like it grew from that. And so before COVID had started doing its thing, I was like, you know what, maybe I thought to myself, do I really have the talent to put myself out there like I used to? Mm-hmm. And so I went ahead and started drawing up various characters based off of things that were passionate. That's really El Puerco Fuerte is a pig character I would draw that is swinging a mace. And so it became that's Puerco Fitz. That character's name is Puerco Fitz. And so I know several people that own Puerco Fitz t-shirts, because I started a Redbubble account just to put my art out there. And we ended up, it's done exceptionally well. And so every so often I'll change designs or rearrange things. And so the art aspect of what I do is more of a cartoony. I'm always comical, things like that. So I tell people all the time, and I do this at competitions or workshops, you know, they come to train mace for free, but they leave with a $500, you know, sketch. So, and so
that's pretty good.
Almost every competition, almost every semi, almost everything I've done with a group, I give a piece of art to an original piece to whomever is the host or whomever is putting it all together. And so at the last time I competed in the Vintage Shrink Games, I put a print in the gift bag. So they, you know, there's, and I can't recall who I gave the original to. I gave the original to the gym owner. That's who I did. And so as a thank you. And he loved it. And so everybody else loved the print as well. So that's made it funny, is that so I'm known for the barbecue and I'm known for the mace, but I'm also known for the artwork. And so I guess I'll announce it now, actually, since I'm chatting with you now, that Puerco Fitz is a comic book that I'm putting together.
That's what I was going to ask you, because we live in an age where the comic book heroes have become very central in our collective mythology. There was a book named Our Gods Wear Spandex to kind of draw the mythical parallels. And in Thor, Love, and Thunder, one of the after credit scenes where they introduce the MCU's Hercules, Zeus gave that speech too, that the superheroes have taken the place of the ancient gods. So that is awesome that you're doing a comic book. Is it going to be The Adventures of Puerco the Mace Swinger, or?
It's going to be, since I'm introducing like five different characters in it, it's going to be like an anthology book. And so that's really what I'm doing, is putting it together. And drawing a whole page of, I learned this over the years, is that even the most, you know, professional of comic book artists will spend 6 to 7 hours drawing one page. And I think Jack Kirby was the guy, you know, Jack the King Kirby was one of the few guys that did 30 pages of artwork in a 24-hour period or something like that. And that was in, like, the 60s. So, even in the digital age of today, still, you know, at times it's a new process. So it's been several years in the making, and I've, you know, we've had several hiccups throughout the time, but I have it in my mind. I'm determined to get it done before 2023, so right around the corner.
It's right around the corner.
I'll be. What's that?
Have you tried the GoFundMe and the Indiegogo and all those other sites? A lot of comic book creators do that now to help fund the production of the comic, because it's gotten expensive.
So,
it's gotten easier, but it's gotten expensive over the years.
So I'm doing self-publishing, and so I've been able to, as a whole, I've been able to do this on my own. Like, I don't want to owe people money. I think that's how I see it, is if I can do it on my own, then everything else is secondary. So, the plan is to not only have a hard copy, but have a digital copy as well. And so, that's what's kind of been, I have an art tablet and I'm slowly teaching myself how to use it. So, that's the benefit of it, is that we live in this age where technology is such a, forthcoming, and I'm able to do what I love in a tiny space. I don't have to leave my house. I have all my maces, all my gattas, kettlebells in my backyard. I have my, my art tablet, my tables, all of my art, and, even the art I've bought over the years, the original pieces, is in my home. So, I mean, that's the benefit. Is if I had to, I have the gym, Alamo Okara. And so I coach from Zoom and my house. I'd rather do it like that, because if I had a facility, the light, the having memberships coming in and out of through the door all the time, that wouldn't be as personable to me as trusting somebody to come into my home and be like, this is how we're going to train this is how we're going to do that. And that, to me, I'd rather give them all the training that I can give them without having to worry about keeping the lights on in the facility. So, doing the art the same way is that I am able to put forth all the best art I can in a cheap and reasonable manner, because I still do commissions, and I've done that. I've done several commissions over the past couple of years, and I'm not going to lie, my art has gotten, I've done leaps and bounds with my art. And I wouldn't, as a teenager, I was never going to think this was going to be my life, but here I am doing it like this, and it's become my life. And so I'm very appreciative of that.
We have creativity shows, and we also have comic book based shows too. So
yeah.
I'll write you on the list for those as well, so we can learn more about that aspect of your journey. What do you see as the future for Mesa training? Like right now, it's a little known pastime. There are competitions, there are books and so forth, but most people I've met and talked to about it had never heard of it before. What do you see as the future for the entire field?
So I think if you put the right people on the forefront of it,
mm-hmm.
Anybody having the right personalities involved with it as it happens. People that are charismatic, people that are personable. These are the people that should be the figureheads of what's happening. And it could be through any event or whatever. I'm not picking names or pointing people out. It's the fact that if you have a figurehead, if you have somebody that can be relatable, then that's going to be a little bit more noticeable to people. Especially, like back in the day, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he was the go-to guy for all the bodybuilding.
Right.
He was this you know, he was this figurehead, had a smile on his face, and was able to, you know, command a room. That aspect has to be, in as a new sport, that has to be on the forefront. Somebody has to be the person that the whole world sees and says, we want to know more about what's happening. So having the right people at the front of it, that's really the real key to it. And so,
well, you're certainly very charismatic and multi-talented, so you would be a good candidate for one of those people, certainly.
I was trying so hard not to say my name. That was the problem. It's totally fine, because I was going to be like, oh, I could totally do that. But the fact was, if it's not me, it should be, you know, somebody along the same line. Well, I can't call anybody, but you get the idea. You know, there's got to be, and then they have to be that diehard person. Like, in order to sport to grow, we have to put ourselves out there so people can see it happen. And that's really like Fit Expos and, you know, trade shows, things like that. I mean, I know several people go to those and are able to talk about the maze or the god or whatever. But as a sport, people have to see it happening. And the,
right.
Here's one of the downsides. Yeah, hit like kettlebell sport, just like May sport, is sometimes boring to watch. And so that's the downside, is that people are like, hey, it starts out with such a bang, and then 2 minutes in, they're still going. What the hell? So that's one of the things that makes it, you know, not as exciting, but for the people that are competing, it makes it exciting for them. So watching it is boring. And seeing it,
I guess that is a challenge, but I'm sure you're up to it with your creativity.
Oh yeah, I am totally up to doing these things. Again, this is the life I chose was not the life that I expected. So. And so being held in high regard for something that I just kind of fell into, that's one of those humbling moments to me, is that when people reach out to me and say, hey, I saw you at the, you know, I saw you compete. It's great. Can you tell me more about it? I will take my time. I will stop what I'm doing and talk to these people, just because it, you know, in order to get ourselves put it, you know, in order to get it known, we have to take the time to talk about it. And some
right.
people in and that there's always the popular kids, you know, in high school and in life, there's always a group of popular kids that believe that there's one way to do things. I like to keep an open mind. I like to say, mm-hmm. hey, let me see what that is. And let's see if we can, you know, work something out. I'd rather keep an open mind and talk to everybody. It doesn't matter who they are, you know, and try to create dialogue.
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it does. So, I mean, it's, you know, I'm still putting myself out there. So I've never put myself in a situation where I don't feel comfortable. I've never mm-hmm. done that. Obviously, if you're not comfortable with something, that's fine. You know, that has to work. But, excuse me. But I'm confident in Mace, and I'm confident in Mace sport. And I would like to see more people in it. Unfortunately, we are brand new. And so we got to go through the growing pains of being brand new. And, you know, do I see a bright future for it? Yes. I am very hopeful that we could be on the forefront of having a competition at the Arnold. That'd be great.
That would be great.
So, but again, you know, that's one of those things that who wants to go to Cleveland? I don't. I didn't mean to get off track. If I sounded like I got off track, I apologize.
No, it's okay.
But it was more...
I'm contemplating the way of the mace, so this is very helpful to me. So, no, you're not off track. You're doing great.
my competitive mindset and my regular mindset are pretty much the same mindset. That's mm-hmm. how it works. You know, there's never a deviation from my from competition to my regular life. And my family is 100% aware of that. They're like, "Oh, what are you doing today? Oh, today's Wednesday. Oh, he's gonna be doing, you know, 1,000 swings. We'll call him in an hour. See what he's doing." Things like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
My family is aware of my training schedule. So, preparing for my sports. Now, that's something that is really hard because it's tiring, and you are exhausted after just doing the practice. And you think to yourself, why did I just do this to myself? Oh, because I'm going to win. That's what it is. And so the competitors have to be, you know, willing to compete. That's another something. If people sign up for it, they don't realize how difficult it is and they're doing it. And so I've seen people look at it and be like, "Hey, I can totally do that," and then compete with somebody. Well, they'll try to compete with me. And they'll be like, "Oh, man, that's hard." You're right, it's hard, but I still did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's having the mindset. You know, you have to walk up there and be like, "You know what? Win or lose, I'm going to give it my all. I'm not going to look." And the problem is, well, what I do, actually, I am essentially legally blind without some glasses. So I take off my glasses. I can't see anyone. And that changes my focus to exactly what I'm doing. I have the mace in my hands, and I can feel, you know, if I'm doing the correct 10-2, if I'm doing a 360, I've done it enough without my glasses on, it's become a second nature to me. So that's my own mindset. Other people, when they take the platform, have to be able to say, "You know what? I'm not going to worry about the guy next to me. I'm not going to worry about the judge in front of me. What I'm going to worry about is making sure I make every rep count." That should be the focus. Winning secondary. Make every rep count.
That is awesome. And you have other challenges, it seems, when you found ways of surmounting them. So that is incredibly awesome. Now, I'm starting from scratch. I've seen a few videos. I've read the ebooks, and I've talked to Rick, and now I've talked to you. So I'm set on getting a sledgehammer to start off with. What do you recommend I do once I have my sledgehammer?
Pick it up and swing it. That is
okay.
You can read all the books and you can watch all the videos, but doing it is something different. Is watch yourself in the mirror, like practice with the sledgehammer. Do the granddaddy of all the, or the, you know, the bare basics is that all you ever need to work with. The 10-2 and the 360. Those are the linchpins to what we do. You master those, everything else kind of falls into place. Mastering them, that's the hard part.
For those who don't know, what do those mean, that type of exercise? What is the 360? What is the 10-2?
The 360 is a full rotation. You start and stop points are the same. I'll talk how I do it. Hands are in the front position, right about the navel. I'm trying to describe it as I do it right now. That's the funny part. I go over the shoulder that's opposite of my top hand. So I'm always I'm right-handed, so I always start going over my left shoulder. And then rotate it around, obviously, behind the back all the way, and then back to the navel position. And that is one full rotation. That's one rep. Now do 10 more. So then the 10-2 position is the hands are the start and stop position, is exactly right about the navel. And I've seen people go a little bit higher and some people go a little bit lower. It's a matter of feeling it out. There's no wrong way to start it. There's no right way to end it. So it's 10-2. So over the shoulder, over your opposite shoulder, your top hand, and then back to the naval position, the mace or gunner, the pole itself is at your 10 and 2. That's the start and stop point is the 10 and 2 positions, the clock. And so you keep going over each shoulder, 1, 2, 3. And the more you do it, you know, it sounds impossible. Some people it does look impossible, but it's putting in the time and effort to master those two exercises. That's all you would need to be able to compete. Always start out with something light, a broomstick or something that doesn't have weight on it. And this is one of those times when I would train with a designer and watch my reflection in the mirror to make sure I have those positions correct every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the hard part. It's mastering your own tendency. Everybody has a different body type. Everybody has a different range of movement. But the movement, no matter the body type, the movement never changes. You're just, your body type changes. So with me, I try to keep, you know, start position right at my navel, and then the end position is the same spot. So keeping those things in mind, what you do now is start swinging. Try, you know, even if you get, you know, 10 reps in a day, try it like that. Try 10 reps a day, every day. If you can go, you know, try to go the distance to doing 15, to doing 20, to doing 25. Rick likes to say you never really master it after you've done until you've done a million reps. Well, I've done a million reps, and I still think I have more to go. So, I never saw myself as a master of anything. I always see myself. I have a white belt mentality every time I pick up the mace. Any type of tool, any type of thing, or, you know, doesn't matter what it is, I still have that beginner mentality of I want to make this mine all the time.
Well, it's good. You're open to learning then, and that's a good talent and a good attitude to have.
Second, I try to be open-minded. Sometimes it doesn't work. You know, it depends on the situation. I absolutely hate mayonnaise, but everybody loves it. And I still absolutely won't eat anything with mayonnaise on it.
Okay. Now, we're approaching the last legs of today's journey, but like I said before, I will have you on again because I'm taking this journey now with a mace. So as we follow my journey, we'll be following your journey. And I have two of your compatriots from the mace training and competition community. Greg and Jonathan. Greg is going to be on later this week, and Jonathan is going to be on in early October, and then Rick, the Mace Man himself, is coming back, I believe, the end of October, the beginning of November, and then I'm hoping to do a monthly show on Mace training and competition.
That's great.
So you heard it here first.
Yeah. Keep me abreast of it. I will definitely like to be a part of it.
Awesome. And since we have a small community on Facebook with like nearly 300 people in it, why don't we start trying to make that interesting and to try to figure out what can be done for the entire hobby?
That'd be great. I'm always up to trying new things with new people, especially when they're newbies, especially when they have it. You know, they trying out something brand new. It's the people that you reach out to should be willing to take the time to talk to you and to help you better yourself. I've ran into so many like coaches or just, you know, in general, people that are held in high regard because of their, you know, whatever they've been done, they end up being epic assholes. And so, to me, I'd rather be nice to everybody because, you know, I was like that once as well. I was brand new and I wanted to, and I reached out to, that's the thing, reach out to the right people. You don't know that until you reach out to them. But fortunately, I've been fortunate enough to be connected and reach out to the correct people. And they've been the list goes on and on of the people that I hold in high regard for doing anything. I can't thank everybody all the time, but they all know that if they send me a text and they try reaching out to me, I will answer their call right away. Just sit there and chat with them about it.
And I can vouch for that. You did. When I reached out to see if you'd be interested in being in the show, you answered right away, and you've been very conscientious with that. So I can vouch for that.
So actually, what made it funny is like I had just answered – when I answered your message, I had answered a message from somebody else in Germany. And I thought without having my glasses on, I looked at it. I was like, oh, what else did they need? And put my glasses on. Oh, that's totally somebody different. I apologize for confusing you.
No problem. We only have a couple more minutes left. How can people contact you about your mace training competition, about your art, about your catering business with Texan barbecue and your t-shirts and all the things you're doing? How can somebody find you and work with you?
So I have two Instagram pages. I have El Puerto Fuerte and Alamo Cara, and they both transcend each other. I don't have specific things on each one. Alamo Cara is the one that has nothing but training on it, and my El Puerto Fuerte page has all of the various other things I do, you know, along with training. Two venues right there are great. I also have the Alamo Cara website. AlamoCara.com, and I also have Beth's Barbecue LLC as a Facebook page. Search those places, reach out on me on social media. I try to answer as quickly as I possibly can.
And I can vouch for that. If you send me those links in a personal message, I will add them to all the promos for today's show and for future shows as well.
Sounds great. That'd be awesome.
Well, Perko, thank you so very much for being on the show today and for sharing all your insights, your wisdom, and your adventures. I enjoyed speaking with you a great deal, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon and following your journey.
That sounds great. I love to be on your show, and I would love to be back.
And thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we will end today with the song Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin that talks about the living myths.
This is the spirit, so sing your song, for we're